Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, to the Sydney Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can also check out Guerrilla Media and the YouTube channel Mr. News. That's me, I'm Mr. News. It stands for Media Revolution News, because if you want a credible media, you've got to have a revolution in it first and overthrow that crap by building something that makes it obsolete. From scratch, of course. It's about getting it done. And anywhere and everywhere, ladies and gentlemen, doesn't matter whether you're in Subway buying a sandwich or something like that, you can still save the world. I'm serious. And I was doing it last night. Like, I can't even get a freaking sandwich without people nearly breaking into a fist fight. Right? I resolved some dude's issues yesterday afternoon. He thought some of these boys had robbed his house, right? Okay. And he was about to go NATO on them when I stepped in and started asking questions like, was anybody harmed? Was any property damaged or missing? No? Well, then you can't walk into Subway and start threatening people, bro. Have you been robbed recently? Yeah, twice, he said. And I said, well, that makes some sense. A lot of times when you get robbed, it happens two or three times within a few months. You know, I remember when I was in Dunedin, I got robbed three times in 1 month, you know? What you need to do is be vigilant. And if you see these guys around again, then it's a pattern. But at the moment, there's nothing you can do to these boys. You can't even take their picture as they're on private premises. And, you know, surprisingly enough, they were about to, like, duke it out or anything before I stepped in. I'm 6'4". I'm kind of intimidating. Used to do security guard and whatever. But they each accepted the situation and went their separate ways. And I also gave them my website. So hopefully two more listeners. All right. Well, anyway, without further ado, we're going to our guest, our fabulous and illustrious, been trying to get him on for goodness knows how long, my poor producer. Having to talk to this man must have been excruciatingly awesome. Cliff, hi. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm just an old bald guy, fellow. It's no big deal.
Yeah, that's what all the old bald guys say. But they really are a big deal.
All right. The reason...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the reason that that we're finally talking here is because of location. And they, you know, like real estate, location, location, location. And there's a lot of things happening on the planet, and I figure you guys are going to be in the thick of it.
In New Zealand, yeah, you reckon?
Correct.
Well, we have had a massive amount of volcanoes going up and a bankster elite Federal Reserve monkey being elected prime minister.
Yes, the latter part we can leave aside. I want to talk just about natural events and not the criminal guerrilla class.
Okay, dokie. Well, before we launch into that, for those of us who don't know who you are and what you do, would you please just give us an explanation?
Oh, years ago I started this screwy endeavor. I started off as a software programmer. and I worked my way up through the, I am an old guy, and I worked my way up through the software industry as it was just getting rolling to get up to the point where I did design, software design, and I did this specialty called design patterns. A really cool, interesting thing that would bore the tears out of anybody that isn't really, really, really drunk. In any event, though, the I turned the design patterns into a software that allowed me to do a reasonably good job at predicting future events at various degrees of distance out into the future from the time we issued the reports. I did this commercially and launched a lot of these reports and sold them for $10 a pop. There's still a bunch of them on my site at halfpasthuman.com. They're fairly reliable. I mean, if you really get in and do an analysis, we're at least twice as good as chance should allow. So that alone makes it worth the $10. But software...
That's more than the placebo effect, at least. Pharmaceutical companies can't claim that kind of success.
That's correct, and we were fairly consistent. And the thing about it is when I got really good in terms of getting a hit here in terms of a forecast, they were usually spectacularly good, if slightly screwy. We had a recent example here where we had the Concordia, that big cruise ship, go off down off the coast of Italy. Prior to that, by, 6 weeks to 3 months or something, I forget now, I had had a forecast that the title of was Blondes on Boats. And I went on to describe the ship of state, and well, it turns out the Concordia's top 13 decks were named for the original 13 Euro countries. And so there are all these linguistic fadeovers from what I was writing about to this actual ship that went down off the coast that turns out that probably went down because the captain was distracted by cleavage. a blonde cleavage at that. So in any event, we get really good with it. Exactly. Yep.
That's And I doubt that that's the first time that huge disasters have happened because of that.
I'm certain. Knowing males, it's probably almost every one of them.
Yeah. Like 9/11, the pilot was looking in a...
No. That's a stage thing. Different deal.
Of course.
No, and so basically what we do, I do is predictive linguistics. It's moved me into another sort of realm here. If you look at linguistics as a field, the people that are involved within it are linguists. It's actually a subset of a larger area of study, which is symbology, which is a subset of this study called semiotics, which is the search for meaning. And it's moved me into doing some work with time and some other things as well. So it's been very interesting work. Although it appears to have basically run its course relative to the changes that we're undergoing in the language now, and I don't want to bore people with all the details, but we've reached this threshold in 2012 where the internet is filled with what I call immediacy language. And basically, let me back up a little bit. All of my work is on this premise that all humans are psychic. And basically, we're, you know, too ignorant or too involved with our daily lives to be aware that we're psychic. But it's got to get out.
You know what's funny, Cliff?
Yeah?
Because that was just what I was thinking. That was actually just in my mind. It's like web, the internet being able to feed information and tell things before it happens. I was thinking that we're partly psychic. And somehow we're capable of influencing technology with our abilities.
Okay, it's not somehow. It's very simply explained from a particular viewpoint that I have. And this viewpoint, I'll go into it. We'll just, and you tell me where to stop here. I'll just do a quick brain dump. From my viewpoint, we are not solid beings, okay? We are energy beings whose minds operate at about 60 frames a second maximally. But our bodies are, in fact, collisions of energy at fantastically complex levels that are happening at about 22 trillion times a second, so far faster than our minds can ever comprehend. And of course, this is how it must be, because our minds are operating with our brain, which is being composed by this collision of all this energy itself. So it's kind of like you can't use a microscope to examine the microscope itself. In our case here, we have vibration that is coming in at such a huge level of complexity that it creates what's known as a standing wave. It gets trapped, if you will, within a basically a cone shape that forms each of our beings. Within that cone shape, we condense our bodies in denser and denser form until ultimately we end up with what we think of as our solid body. And we're just tricked into thinking that because our poor minds can only operate at 60 frames a second. If we could see it even a couple of trillion times a second, we would see a much different environment in which everything vibrates and is shimmery. In any event, that standing wave is that is Vinnie Eastwood sitting there. Every single one of his hairs is, in fact, which he's got a lot, is in fact an antenna that is a vibrational energy of quite complex nature that's just waiting for something to come along for that antenna to react to and feed it into the greater entity that is Vinnie Eastwood. So psychic ability is rather a mundane concept in an energetic world where everything is flowing as energy. So because you can see, for instance, that like a rock thrown into a pond, any disturbance of the energy field will propagate energy waves outward, as we know it does in electricity or any of these grosser forms of energy that we can understand here in our 60 frames a minute world.
And it so happens in many. It happens in many ways. Like even if you smile at somebody, it'll ripple out, and they'll smile at seven more people.
Correct. And the transcendental meditation, the whole idea that, you know, if you're calm, I'm an Aikido-ka, okay? I'm a person that studies Aikido. And one of the premises of our art is being getting to a point of calm, of centeredness, of being equanimously open to all circumstances. So you have the same relaxed attitude to someone coming to shake your hand that is a long friend of yours to someone who is a potential mugger. And the effect is entirely outward propagating in that the mugger instantly, when he faces you and you're in this relaxed, smiling, happy environment, he loses all of his power. It just goes away. The mere fact that he continues to come on over and you throw him around a few times until he gets tired is just the exercise that you're going through. But the minute he begins his assault and you face it with this relaxed, calm, smiling, outwardly generating dynamic sphere, that individual has lost their ability to cause you really any harm. And this propagation effect works at the psychic level. You're sitting there as Vinnie Eastwood sitting on your chair, and you know, you got this little twitch in the back shoulder there. You're just not really sure what it is. And that's that psychic impression trying to work its way out. And eventually it's going to find its way out in the words you choose in the various places you type those words on the internet, simply because it's got to come out somewhere. And so it's my premise that the easiest place for it to come out is within your brain, where it just causes subtle little changes in the choices of words you use to describe ordinary things, like a beer and a piece of pie with a mate. Why would you use any other word than you've ever used to describe that situation before? Why go outside of your way to hunt down new words and increase your lexicon of use? And the reason that we have that, the answer to that why question, is because there's this psychic impression that Vinnie Eastwood, the standing wave of energy, has received, and it's just got to come on out. And so he uses a particular word, or he thinks about a particular guy, and what do you know, that phone rings, right? Or he happens to turn the corner, and there's that fellow, and he's already figured that he wanted to invite Vinnie in for a beer, right?
Well, I was thinking that's not entirely similar to how I think of what God is.
I'm not speaking about that.
I know, but it's something different, because I don't think of God as anybody else does. I don't think anybody's ever described it like this. But you know that that guy who did a microscope back in like the early 20th century, and he managed to get 60,000 times magnification. You hear about that?
Sure.
Granite crystal. And of course, as we all know the story, you know, inside one cell is many cells, and inside those many cells is one as many cells, and so on and so forth, infinitely down the chain. And it's my contention that it'd probably be, as well as some cells being infinitely small down the chain, they'd be infinitely larger up the chain. So let's say, for example,
what's known as the macroscope.
Yeah, so I'm a one cell on this organism, perhaps called the Earth or something of that nature, and every organism's latent psychic energy affects the organism above it, okay? So, for example, I'm God to all the cells in my body in which they reside, and I'm a cell in the and the earth. So I can actually affect the earth. This is my God, or whatever kind of thing. And it's the latent intentions and psychic energies that we all have is what makes really amazing, different, unexplainable things happen everywhere that science can't kind of fathom or whatever. But, you know, it's just an idea of mine.
No, I understand what you're saying. It makes sense. It's a good operating model, and it is true. Regardless of how the mechanism works, intent, especially focused intent, with what I call, or with what, you know, a key energy or chi or prana, you know, a life force behind it, is extremely powerful and can make a difference even in matter. So if you think about the world as or the whole universe as this vibratory realm of energy, then the discrete layer that is our eyes, that is presenting to us our visual information, in fact, does not do the decoding of the information coming in. It is the vibration of the visual cortex of the brain that actually translates the graphic image coming in through the eyes into something that we call meaning. So to a certain extent, if you had some other mechanism of getting that grapheme image into the brain, the eyes would be superfluous. The eyes don't really see in that sense. They're merely a sense conduit. And the issue for me is that by changing the nature of your consciousness, you would be potentially able to change the nature of how you are perceiving the information being presented to you. And this explains the ability of people as they go through various different kinds of, you know, initiation, enlightenment experience, shamanic, etc., to encounter reality at a different level of vibration than we experience naturally. And many of them will state, you know, shamans, especially of the Latin American tradition, will state quite explicitly that focused intent expressed with key force, especially with sound behind it, is very powerful indeed and causes physical effects to occur. And they do it on a daily basis. Now, this is basically what I was tapping into with my software, because I was aggregating, you know, all of the millions of people out there and Vinnie Eastwood every time he chatted. My robots were grabbing in little bits and pieces. They didn't care who was saying things to whom. They cared what was being said outside of the normal range of lexicon that was usually applied to that beer and pie conversation. Make any sense at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, basically, you know how they say God is omnipotent because he can be everywhere at once and he knows everything, kind of like that. What you've done is kind of, I think, made a technological impression of it so that it actually can aggregate all the knowledge and be everywhere at once. So in essence, it kind of has the ability to predict the future like a God.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, I'm sorry, we're coming on to break, Cliff. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, sure, with Cliff High from halfpasthuman.com.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we all get, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino, I'm not Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand?
They Welcome back.
Goes off your back with hefty tax demands.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's about being heavily taxed by bandwidth charges. This is an Eastwood show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Search it up on Google, Vinny with a Y, and also with a little search term clarification, chat, and join us in the chat room. It'll be very nice to have you there. Cliff High is my guest, and it's also very nice to have him here, too. Welcome back, Cliff.
Thank you very much.
Now, you were telling me back in the early days where you didn't know exactly what it was you were getting into, and as I've said it, running a skeleton crew on a shoestring budget, from which there is no, like, it's a figurative string, because there literally wasn't enough money to buy any string.
That's the case. Yes, indeed. We were really in debt for a long time, and a couple of very wealthy and far-seeing people in the commodities business came along and bailed me out because they saw the value of what I was doing here. And this is Jim Sinclair of the gold world. And, you know, it helped us out, got us through a hurdle, and, you know, basically the rest is history. And we arrive at where we're at now, 2012, with all of the strangeness.
It is a strange time, isn't it? But isn't it great? I like to be in this particular time of great crisis. And what was that Chinese character? It's like the same for crisis as it is for opportunity, allegedly, or something like that.
Crisis includes opportunity, exactly. Yeah, disaster includes both the elements of crisis and opportunity. And that, we certainly have that. I've been chatting with a bunch of people in India, and they've got a particular view of the planet and the solar system and time that relates to these ideas of yugas or ages. And they're saying that, well, we're actually not in the Kali Yuga. We've passed out of it. We're in the 300 years into this transition age. But in either event, it's really an interesting time because we're going to be approaching the cessation of this particular world by the Mayan sense. But in the Yuga sense, it rolls over in 2025 into the next Yuga, which, you know, theoretically is better than where we're at now. Mm-hmm. And it all sort of makes sense, too, both from a vibrational viewpoint of the planets or of the universe, and then where we are in space relative to the Earth and everything else. You know, if we're energetic beings, the planet is an energetic being, as is the sun, all of universe is, the idea of God. Actually, when you think about it, the expression of God that the Sikhs and the Jain have, in which there is God non-personified, but God is the ultimate, the first pulse, the ultimate vibration, is the probably the truest form of thinking about it, and everything else beyond that is merely laying our particular ego and bent on it, right? What hat we want our God to wear, but it's our view of God, which is basically this ultimate vibration that we're just within our 60 frame per minute mind grasping desperately to try and understand something of. Make sense? So from a vibrational viewpoint, the work we were doing sort of validated because I was able to consistently pick up impressions working on a theory that I had. It doesn't prove that theory, but it validated it far enough that I was able to make improvements, derive corollaries, derive other theories, and make other projections off of that that turned out to be true. So it lends some validity to it. And that validity of my operational theory about linguistics, how we were all antennae for leaking out psychic impressions based on what words we chose out of our regular lexicon. And here's some numbers for you, just for monkey mind. Vinnie Eastwood is a regular English speaker, probably knows 100,000 words internally. Now if you just ran into him, you would have some understanding of 100,000 English words. By the time you're 30. I'm assuming that your voice, that you're at least 30, but maybe not.
I actually had like 140,000 when I was 14.
Oh, hey, cool. Okay, cool. You're ahead of the game then. Okay. But basically, the average English speaker has 100,000 words internalized. But get this, in any given year, they may only routinely use less than 25,000 of those words. And within their average week, depending on what kind of work they're doing, they might be using from 1,100 to 11,000 word dictionary, and that's it. And it may just stay that consistently, week in and week out. You know the poor guy, he's a meat cutter, and you know his life just doesn't have any excitement. He's a truck driver, that kind of thing. And it just wears on you. I've been there. I used to deliver furniture. And you just don't think about a whole lot other than your job. It narrows you down to this little set of words. So my thinking was, why does, you know, Joe truck driver suddenly reach out of that set for a new word when he's trying to describe this particular session with his mates?
Well, I wanted to cut in here because I've had a couple of listeners who are truck drivers, and what they do, Cliff, is they load up these big MP3 players that they can plug into their trucks.
No, USB, I know, audio books and so on. Those are long haul guys. I'm talking the poor short fellow that's got 9 stops in 2 hours hustling furniture up and down and doesn't have the time to turn on even the radio.
Dang.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm not trying to castigate truck drivers as being unintellectual at all. And in fact, I think that the more unschooled a person is, the greater the likelihood is that they may be educated.
Yeah. It's like, was it Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, that said the people who read nothing at all are usually more informed than the people who read only newspapers?
Indeed. Indeed. Yes. Especially these days, since all those newspapers are written by the same five guys.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great if we had a different kind of law with regarding corporate branding. Like, for example, you had to have the exact same brand for every single company that you own. Like, it'd be really funny, you know, you'd be walking around the media or anything like that, everything would say Murdoch.
Exactly.
It'd be like out of an episode of The A-Team or something.
No, it'd actually be a lot more like that movie Idiocracy. You ever see that? Yeah, that's precisely what occurs, you know. Costco owns your law school and your couch manufacturer as well as the apartment building. So, you know, that kind of thing. But getting back to my my premise here, because I don't want to waste your audience's time, and I do have some information about this that is going to affect all of us, and it comes basically back to this vibrational theory thing, right? You guys are experiencing Earth changes down there at a faster rate than a lot of the other parts of the planet. I think I figured out why this is the case. I also think I can make some small level of projections about what we are all, because I'm also on the Pacific Rim of Fire up here in the Northwest, sort of diagonal from you guys, what we're all facing here over these next few years. And the reason that I've come to this understanding has to do with, you know, basically 10 or 12 years of thinking about these things relative to this vibrational theory and how things work. And so some of the things that we need to discuss were included in these three videos that I have up on my site underneath the name of your show on the left-hand side. Now, my site is Half Past Human, and these halfpasthuman.com, and I'll just leave the three video links up there for a number of days so that people can get at them as long as this show is out there airing, because these videos are very important, because it goes back to this idea of schooling versus education. Now, I am not a schooled individual, okay? I have no degrees. I've attended a little bit of college here, a little bit of college there, primarily focused on technical subjects, oceanography, or programming. But it was basically to go and learn something specific and then get out, because I have a very thin butt, and I just couldn't sit still very long. So that's just not my method of learning, that is to say, going to school. However, I'm very educated. I invented software that allows me to read from computers at up to 2,000 words per minute, that received a patent in the 5 million range in 1999 here in the United States. That software allowed me to suck down vast quantities of information and decide what was good and what was bad. As a result of being able to read all of this and go through all of this analysis, I've come to certain conclusions about a lot of the schooling that we all suffered, and that is that we were taught very bad information. Some of this bad information has a potential to make our thinking so warped that we could do things that are not in our own interest relative to our immediate survival in the next few months. So, here's the basic premise that we need to start thinking about, and it's in the first of the three video links that are on my site. And this first premise starts about two minutes in. This is the fourth, I think, part four of a series of videos on that first link. You don't have to look at all of it. If you go about 2 minutes in, you'll get the basic concept. And then you can go back and look at these other parts of the video, because it's very interesting. But basically, the concept is this. Our planet does not rotate around the equatorial plane of the sun. It never has, and it never will. Our planet has never come anywhere close to rotating around the equatorial plane of the sun, and no planet does. All of the planets are dragged behind the sun the way the comet would drag debris behind it, because our sun is basically like a comet moving through space. As Vinny noted earlier, we were talking about the idea of cellular stuff being the same all the way down, the metaphor, the fractal. It goes the same down as it goes outward. So to a certain extent, we can think of our solar system as a giant cell. And within that giant cell, the sun could be the nucleus, and we could be all, our planets whizzing around and stuff could be like the DNA, if you wanted to think about that. You know, the little strands of RNA and DNA that are out there doing stuff. But basically, we're trapped within our solar system. And this is why the Voyager spacecraft have never left the solar system, is because they were operating, or at least we were told they were operating, under the premise that we were in a heliocentric model where we revolved around the equatorial region of the sun, a big flat plate, if you will. And we are not. We're very much more like a shape of a comet, where we're in this cone being dragged behind the sun, and that cone is a discrete area of non-interstellar space that is created by the sun.
So kind of like a cone shaped gravity well. So instead of going around the sun whole hog, like going all the way around it, we simply spin round inside the column of this cone, and that's what changes our weather and our seasons and everything, right?
It's exactly correct. And there's some other ramifications to that. As you can see, the cone would be widening as it would go out further, right? Away from the sun. And thus we see that's where the bigger, fatter planets are, out where it's wider and there's more room for them. The further out you go, the bigger the planets become, the giant gas giants out there.
But if there was this gravity well, it would preclude the possibility of other planets coming into the solar system, like the Planet X thing, wouldn't it?
Correct. It's bullshit. Oh, sorry. Don't mean to say step over the boundaries, but correct. It is absolute BS. It is excrement of the highest order. There is no Planet X. Nibiru is a psyop, a disinformation thing, and all of the Earth changes can be adequately explained without postulating any of this. And in fact, we do have a binary solar system. But on all binary solar systems, the stars don't come close to each other. They stay away from each other like dumbbells, like the two ends of a dumbbell separated, and they spin around relative to each other. They don't go zinging in close to each other. No binary stars ever come in and collide or alter their relationship to each other. And we do indeed have a binary star system. But our binary star is probably Sirius, and it's a number of light years away.
Oh, so we're talking about the spiral galaxy, for instance, and the reason it's going round and round, isn't it? And it's not just got all these planets that are also got, it's not just got 100 billion stars with planets around them going round and round, and then all of them going round and round together. It's actually just a vortex, like no different from a sink. And the water rushing around of it. It's just vortexing around, and everybody's being drug in the same direction behind their stars.
Correct. And we're all whizzing around like we were all comets. And the same metaphor works all the way up. You'll notice that there's, in fact, comas that seem to extend off of galaxies, just the way there are comas that extend off of solar systems when viewed from our perspective.
Does that mean by conjecture that we can actually, perhaps at some point after how many trillions of years, eventually reach the center of the galaxy where there's more clustering of bright stars? Is there an inward trajectory at all?
Okay, no. You're making an assumption. You're actually projecting the idea of water swirling around a drain up to a galaxy, and it doesn't go that far. In fact, the impetus is not inward, it is outward. It is expansion outward because of the way that the universe works. Okay,
so we used ripples. Ripples rather than
correct,
a drain.
Correct. All of the energies, instead of ripples going down into the drain, it's much more like ripples in a pond where we've got a sudden big, you got a turtle down there, and you've got a turtle, and he makes a big disturbance, a big bubble comes up, and it sends ripples outward throughout the whole pond towards the edge from the very middle. That's very much more what we've got as opposed to the other approach where we're swirling around the drain. Okay, so we're sort of like
total growth and expansion in every direction and every sense of the word. And so that means that planets grow, do stars grow?
Correct. We grow. Everything grows continuously. Hang on just a second here. Let me instruct security force.
No!
Anyway, here's...
Yeah, I do have a conjecture though, Cliff. I don't think everything grows, because I've met a lot of people who are not grown up at all. He's going to take care of his dogs. All right. Okay. Well, I thought about that. That is a very interesting premise, and like, the fact is we don't have access, or at least I don't at least, have access to any form of star travel or anything like that by which to experience perhaps any other planet, right? So I'm confined to this one at this point, and I don't have the ability to travel into different bodies either at this point, so I'm confined to this one as well. Now, in my experience, when you're confined to one place in one form, it's kind of like a bit of a prison, isn't it? But the thing is, you can still have a heck of a lot of a lot of interesting things happen when the guards aren't looking. We'll be right back after the break with Cliff Eye from halfpasthuman.com.
going to be.
I stand alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly, zeke-parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Parroting puppet gangster playboy.
The show that is all about computer god communism. And the founder of it is right here, Cliff White.
Now that's a terrible rap, dude. I didn't find found it.
In a way, it's true, though, because there's a kind of communal aspect with the with how everybody interacts with the internet, and you've created some sort of, I don't know, amazing machine to sort of oversee it, like I don't know, like the architect of the Matrix or something. You're like the earthly version of the architect of the Matrix.
Well, I wish that were the case, but let me put it another way to you. It's more like I've invented a machine to take your pulse, okay? It doesn't control your heartbeat. It doesn't control the pulse, but it does measure it, and that's really as far as I got. Now, if you want to blame me for a lot of computerization things, I can take that as an effective rap because I used to work for the people that were digitizing most of the planet we now live in when I was young and naive and in the software business. But even so, I was just a tool in the giant marching digital age. Your computer god thing. And it's necessary, I think, because, see, we face some really serious issues here, and we need all the tools that we can possibly get hold of, which is why, to a certain extent, I really, really, really resent the dark and evil cabal that rules the whole world, not because they want to rule the world. That is just a particular bent of theirs that, while I don't share it, it doesn't particularly disturb me. I would like that they would rule the world a whole lot better than they do. But what really annoys me is they don't share information. Because we need that information in order to be rationally informed about what's going to go on. Because as individuals, we are all going to be faced with thousands of decisions over these next few years that will affect our lives. And this gets us back to the whole idea of what's going on with the planet and the Big Bang and all of that, right? Before we were cut off. I was saying that there is no Big Bang. From my viewpoint, there was a little bloop. Okay, the first pulse came out. It kept crossing over itself 22 trillion times a second. And so in the first second, we had 22 trillion collisions. And the second, we had 44 trillion collisions. And it is, by my estimation, in the third to the eighth second, we had enough collisions for the first matter to be formed. The first matter was a hydrogen atom. When it appeared, it created its own space that was necessary to encompass the hydrogen atom. So there was no big bang. There was simply the creation of an atom that came out of the matrix, if you will, of the energy of everywhere that started the whole thing, and that atom, and it's never stopped since. And this is the sign of good science. Good science never postulates a discontinuous operation. It never says, oh, miracle occurred here, or, you know, oh, this occurred here, and it's never happened before, and it'll never happen again, and we're supposing that this occurred to explain why we think of things happen now. So good science observes what we've got going on at the moment, goes all the way back and says, could this have happened? And indeed it could happen. What does this postulate? Well, if a single atom came out and started it all off as, let's say, the little bloop as opposed to the Big Bang, where the atom goes bloop, and then there's bloop, 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 infinitely, well, universe can expand infinitely. Each atom brings its own space. There's no problem there. All of the things that were rational problems with the view of the planet, of the universe, with the Newtonian physics, go away with the little bloop idea where each atom pops in with its own space. But this also brings in, as you say, some really interesting ideas. Suns are alive. Planets are alive. Planets grow. And if you go down to the third video on my three there, you'll see this video done by Neil Adams that shows you how the Earth has grown. And the Earth has grown hugely over the past multiple millions of years. And it is not done. That's the big issue. That's my point for our discussion today, is that we're about to live through one of those.
And the very simplest thing is, like, if you think that the Earth doesn't expand or increase in mass or anything like that, How does the sun transfer energy to trees? Through photosynthesis, right? What correct. Happens when those leaves fall to the ground? It creates more soil, right?
Correct.
So you automatically create more mass simply by the fact that there's sun on the planet and leaves go through photosynthesis and become more soil. So biomatter alone, the Earth expands, let alone anything else.
Correct. And we have the idea now where we can monitor with all of our really cool satellites that they occasionally give us access to the things like the high energy particles, all those things that are whizzing around that are faster or hidden from us that are not light, where we don't see the effect of them. And, you know, gamma rays, X-rays, and all these kind of things, they go zinging down into the middle of the planet, and they cause a similar effect there that light causes on trees. Only what they do is they create matter in the middle of our planet. And our planet, in the middle of it, it expands. This is why our planet is not a sphere. It's what's known as an oblate spheroid. We're bigger round in the middle, like most people, than we are top to bottom. And also, just like most people, we have an equatorial bulge. We're not smooth around the middle. Our planet is 26 miles wider in the middle, 13 miles on either side, so to speak, across the equator than it is pole to pole. That's 26 miles.
It's like a mini set of hips or something.
Correct. Love handles. And the issue for us is that when the planet grows, because of the research that I've been looking into, because of a lot of stuff that the Russians write about, some of the stuff we're able to get out of the Chinese as well, because they've been considering this, but we're able to now say, aha, we can actually determine where the planet is likely to grow next based on the ratio of the love handles, if you will, this equatorial bulge and its edges, because over time it is noted that those equatorial bulge edges creep upward and downward towards the poles. So our equatorial bulge, when we first had our love handle, it wasn't anywhere near as big. It was a lot thinner. It only reached from the equator up to, say, maybe 4 or 5 degrees north and 4 or 5 degrees south. But now our equatorial bulge is quite large. We're a more mature, advanced planet, and our equatorial bulge reaches up to in the upper 30s south and north of the equator. So that is where the expansion factors are starting to come in. And this accounts for all of the earthquakes and the volcanism and so on and so on. And we can even make some predictions off of this. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, because basically what's going on is the planet's creating new matter in the middle of it. And so it's got to expand in there, and it's got to put pressure on the outward. There never was any idea. There never was Pangaea or Gondwana land, the giant continent where everything was all connected. It does not work on our planet at this particular sphere ratio. Go ahead.
From the inside, how is it capable of expanding and producing matter? I mean, we understand it might be a living organism. Is that what we're going on here? That the center of the Earth, not much like a living creature, is simply growing and expanding, and just like a teenager growing and going through growth spurts, it has growing pains, doesn't it?
Correct. And there's also
and you tense up and I remember when I was growing, I mean, I'm 6'4" now, but when I was a teenager, I went through massive cramps and growing pains and things of that nature. It's like it's the human body equivalent to having an earthquake or a volcanic eruption, really, isn't it?
Correct. And it's the same metaphor again, all the way down is all the way out. And we're going through those kind of growth pains with our planet at the moment. And when it occurs, it's very much like that. We have a slightly different issue. We don't want people to think that the center of the planet is like a giant amoeba or flesh or anything. You'll have people that will tell you it's a molten mass of metal around a solid mass of metal. And again, that's BS, okay? It's really plasma. It's energy. And so in that sense, it's alive because it's a giant, just like we're energy beings that can only see ourselves as solid because our minds only work at 60 frames a minute, seconds. If we could actually see the middle of the Earth, we would see it as like a giant magnetic field containing a near sun-like experience from our perspective, because it probably gives off light as well as matter.
Well, wasn't there also the fact that I forget who I was talking to about this from the Keshe Foundation, about how the human body actually does generate a magnetic field. So that means by extension, living organisms, and it doesn't matter what life form it is, whether it's an insect or a human being or a whale or whatever, living organisms actually generate magnetic fields. So if you simply had a much larger organism,
could it get a bigger field?
I mean, as opposed to the only thing that can generate a magnetic field is a molten core. Well, we patently proved that that's not true because living organisms do it.
Correct. And also, no molten metal will hold magnetism. That's a fact of physics. You can get any metal, as soon as you get it molten, it loses any magnetism it used to have, including any of the permanent magnets. And in fact, the only known molten material or energetic material that can generate a magnetic field is plasma, and it generates magnetic fields all out of proportion to its physical size. So it counts for all of it.
Isn't most of the universe plasma, though?
Correct, and so are we. At internal levels, we are like amoeba. If you go and you look at the Russian Kirillian photography and everything, you see that we not only generate magnetic fields, we generate all kinds of what we would think of as electrical and proto-electrical activity, including light. And our DNA talks to itself with light and all of that. So again, we are energetic beings living on an energetic planet. And you guys live next to or near the Asian world, and so you're familiar with the concept of the yin energy and the yang energy. And so we're yang critters walking around on a yin energetic planet, and that's just the way things are. The duality of all of the expression back and forth. And it has to do with this, the energy waves and the pause in the energy waves. And so it all fits.
Is it truly duality, one versus the other, or is it symbiosis and one rotating and needing the other to exist?
You don't say one versus the other. You never say both, or you never say either.
The duality of, say, politics, for example, left versus right is a duality. They're in opposition.
Sure. Define left without right, though. That's the point. Yeah, you've got to have them both.
Exactly, and hence it is a symbiotic relationship regardless, and you cannot have an adversarial relationship Correct. Without a symbiotic one.
Correct.
And the same must be true up the scale as down the scale.
Sure, that's why we call ourselves partners in Aikido, not adversaries.
Mm. All right, we'll be right back with Cliff High from half past. Damn, my brain's getting a real fungasm on. Yeah, we'll be back right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Cliff High, halfpasthuman.com.
Airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Everyone's asleep.
It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Would appreciate it if you'd join us in the chat room there. Very easy to find. If you use an NSA-sanctioned search engine like Google, you can just Google Vinnie Eastwood chat room. And they have, and it'll be top of the list because they keep a good eye on me, and it makes me feel so safe and protected that I have no privacy. My very special guest is Cliff High, I'm glad that you're enjoying yourself and having a few cackles at my privacy's expense. But there's a lot of crap going on in New Zealand here right now. Just in terms of the Earth itself. So we've had White Island, which is a volcano, what, like 10 miles, 50 miles off the coast, I think. And in a direct line, of course, along with the alignment of the Pacific Plate, we have Tongariro, a rather large volcano in the middle of a national park, which is not maybe 20 miles or something like that south of the largest volcano that I've ever freaking seen, Lake Taupo, which you can barely see the other side of on a clear day. You know, that's a crater. And apparently the last time it went off in, like, what, 500 AD or whatever, the Romans could see the ash. That's how big it was. And Stan Deo had a vision some time ago that Lake Taupo was going to erupt and that it would split the North Island in half and all this other stuff. So I'm just basically, I don't know. It's kind
I don't
like
know about
a,
the
it's
idea.
It's kind of like being a marshmallow in a bag next to a bonfire.
Yeah, but let's educate ourselves as our and be educated marshmallows, okay? Because Stan Deo,
of course.
He's talking his vision aside. The volcano may indeed erupt, but the North Island, you guys are part of what's known as the Zealandia continent. You're not really like islands like Hawaii or those are individual cones of former volcanoes, the individual islands there. You guys are actually part of a bedrock continent called Zealandia. And so
the continent used to be bigger?
Oh, huge, huge. You guys are, in fact, living on the top. We're all living on the tops of mountains. I'm 105 feet off of the Puget Sound here in the Pacific Northwest in an area that if you took the water away, I'm on the top of a mountain and there's all these steep valleys going on down. All the fjords are simply water-filled in valleys that are the mountains of a continent. If you guys go and look at the Pacific, the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, topographical maps, you'll find that there's this thing called the Zealandia continent that has been a particular interest to the United States defense mapping industry since probably the late 80s, because it's the hub of all of these trenches. And they had this idea that they were going to send their submarines virtually undetected through all these trenches, using them sort of like highways, if you will, right? Conduits all the way around the Pacific.
Underwater highways.
Correct. Around the Pacific Ring of Fire, where it'd be hard to find them, because the theory was they wouldn't be up and about, they would be down shielded in canyons, and so you wouldn't be able to see them with regular kind of sonar and that sort of thing. That was the theory way back when. Anyway, it led to this huge amount of mapping in your region. And your White Island, your ash volcano thing there, is something I've been expecting, and that's what we're calling new lands or rising land. And that's the first sign of the expansion event that we're going through and will likely go through for a number of years as our planet expands and goes through these convulsions. And we'll go through all kinds of Earth changes, and there's no Planet X, there's no Nibiru, there's no dwarf star or any of that required. And
it happens all on its own.
Correct, and it happens seasonally, so to speak, with long seasons about 13,000 years apart. And this accounts, and they're linked to the precession of the equinoxes, but the precession of the equinox does not in any way control this. It's simply temporally linked because of where we happen to go through in space. If we go back to the idea that our sun is a comet that's dragging us around, there's a couple of things that are sort of a thought experiments that come from that. One of the things that's been validated by the Russians, that the space between solar systems is not a vacuum. The space between our sun and the sun Sirius, any of the three stars in the Sirius star system, is not a vacuum. It's interstellar media, they call it. The only vacuum is behind our sun, in between the planets, because our sun's rushing along so fast, it in essence creates the vacuum. Anybody that's been in a boat on a lake or wherever, and you leave the dock and you see all that little foam and stuff that comes along with you in the little part of your wake as you're gaining speed, you're creating a little mini vacuum or vortex behind you that's drawing all this in. And in fact, that little area behind your boat does not share the same relationship to the rest of the water around the boat. And that's basically what's going on with our solar system. So a couple of things are evident from this. The Russians determined that we were entering an area of space that was denser. They called it the fluffy cloud. And fluffy is probably a bad choice of words given where we're at and what we're going to go through. But it was denser. And because it was denser, our cone shrunk relative to its former size. So Earth's whipping around in its particular harmonic in our cone has shrunk in its sphere. Hasn't changed our orbit, hasn't changed our rotation. It has changed our spiral trajectory as we follow the sun, making these sort of obvious changes that no one can really peg down, you know.
Sure. So it's kind of like, you know, when you're stirring your coffee or something like that and you're stirring with the spoon on the outside of the cup, the inside of the cup doesn't spiral quite so deep. But if you spiral it right in the middle as fast as you can, a hole kind of appears and the basically the water droplets at the very, very bottom of that spiral are moving incredibly fast. And whenever something's moving incredibly fast, there's that centrifugal force, for example. And if anybody's ever felt that, you've been on these rides at the amusement parks where you go round and round really, really fast, and you become really heavy and you get pinned against the wall as you're spinning around in the machine sort of thing. It's sort of like that, except you're doing it to an entire planet that weighs, what, how much?
It's the whole solar system. It's not just – that's why those videos are very necessary. That's why it's necessary that we look at these videos and understand the spiral nature of our solar system, because it also relates to the expansion nature of our planet. And the mathematics that were done in the 1930s by this mathematician, Dr. Bhatt, out of India, proved to be prescient and valuable and positive in terms of we were able to prove them, and his view of the spiral nature of the solar system is accurate. That supports a whole lot of things. The idea of as below, as above kind of a deal, right? The fractal nature of universe. So we grow, plants grow, the planets grow, solar systems grow, all of universe grows one cell at a time, one atom at a time, and so on. But here's the issue, just like with teenagers, where they start growing bone marrow, well, the bone's got to grow to accommodate the necessary new marrow cells. And that's why you get those aches and pains, the growing pains that are so typical as children hit that growth spurt. And that's kind of what's going on here. The Earth has got a magnetic containment vessel around a giant plasma core. The plasma, even though it's energy and not solid matter, can trap things like high-energy particles, like gamma rays and other high-energy particles emitted from the sun. And so it traps them, and it increases its energetic mass, if you will, and it creates more matter. And so that matter's got to appear somewhere, and it creates it in the middle of the planet as hydrogen, helium, and all the atoms all the way up through it, including oil and everything else, rock and so on. And that matter is now expressing itself, causing, for instance, the White Island. And my point is that the location of the White Island triggered some thinking when I was looking at these maps last year, plotting this. Because I was figuring that it was going to come off the Chatham Rise, which is north of the Boundary Trough, which is the separation point for the South Island and runs along the and is actually at the southern end of the Alpine Fault that runs all the way through the South Island and up through the North Island in a direct line to what's known as the separation between the Kermack Trench and the Havre Trough. Basically, what I'm saying is that, you know, Standeo may be quite correct and the volcano may blow up, but my thinking is it would be much more akin to what occurred here in St. Helens, where the mountain would blow the top half of itself off, but it didn't split the county or you know, cause any great damage to the local area. That is your area as well. You're quite solid in the North Island's location and can't be split by that volcano, but I bet you that you guys are going to get a whole lot more activity off of your coast relative to those volcanoes, and you need to start preparing for coastal problems relative to volcanism.
What exactly would be those coastal problems? Like, were we talking tsunamis?
Correct. A lot of earthquakes, a lot of tsunamis. Maybe the idea as well of coastal degradation. So you would have the issue of where a volcano off the coast of the North Island, say, right, up in the Hikurangi Plateau area, might go off. It's about 50 to 60 miles off of the northeasternmost edge of the North Island. It may go off, and because of the location of the magma area underneath it, it would drain a couple of those magma pools that are feeding the volcanoes in the Northern Island. And without those magma... I'm sorry.
Do you think the government of New Zealand knows about this and maybe have been taking preparations? Because they've been doing a huge amount of disaster preparation and tsunami drills and stuff like that in like the capital city for like the last couple of years.
Well, they would be smart to do so. I'm sure that there are people that know what I'm doing or know what I know simply because, look, I've had to deduce all of this. No one tells me this stuff. And so the fact that I'm deducing it means that it's more or less out there for people that want to sit around and think about things deeply. And so there have got to be people that know this, and they probably work for the government. And so I'm sure there are areas of the government. In fact, look at what the USA government's been doing relative to all of the mapping all around Australia underseas, with the idea that they wanted to see how stable it was, and that's why they put their all that money into Pine Gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Leonce Kelly from Pine Gap on the show, and what strikes me is that every time that you keep a secret from anybody, it doesn't matter who you're keeping the secret from, the entire reason for keeping a secret is because you're afraid of the consequences of the truth. When you have facilities...
I don't mean to laugh, but I know where you're going.
So I don't know what is going to happen exactly. But if you're telling me that we have to expect a seasonal kind of variation in the Earth's history kind of thing, where we may experience increased earthquakes, volcanic activity, basically natural disasters, and this is going to be global, correct?
Okay. And ongoing, and we are experiencing that. If you look at the charts, earthquakes have been ramping up so much that, in fact, all the official earthquake monitoring places have had to downgrade their charts just to keep it, quote, under control. And we've got sinkholes appearing all over. The planet is expanding now. And I think we're nearing a threshold event. And that may be what the Mayans were talking about, and how they would know that is anybody's guess. But I can see that within a few months, we're going to get what we had called in our work. Okay, let me back up. In 2003, I started coming across some stuff in my work in our predictive linguistics that related ultimately to the Sumatran tsunami and our prediction 8 or 9 months ahead of time before that it happened. And we got that one correct. But that was part of a larger set. We deal in set theory, this obscure part of mathematics that can be applied to any number of things. Anyway, the set theory showed it had a particular set relative to Earth changes that revolved around the idea of an upcoming Pacific plate crack. Now, at the time, I didn't recognize what the linguistics were really saying. It's not that the plate's going to crack, for instance, and we're going to have a new fault line, and the two plates are going to rub against each other, or one's going to subduct, because subduction points do not exist. Subduction is a myth. There's no such thing as a subduction point anywhere on the planet. In fact, all points are expansion points, joints, if you will, expansion joints. And what our data showed was a crack, but when I went back and reexamined the linguistics now relative to my understanding of the expansion of the planet, it is clearly describing a crack that allows new lands to rise up, as in the form of probably some really serious underseas volcanic problems. This will include, and in our data it suggested something to watch out for, was gas. As in, you know, hydrogen sulfide and all of these other gases that come out of these kind of things, mixing in with seawater, forming such nasties as airborne sulfuric acid and hydrochloric acid, et cetera, et cetera. And so it may be a wise idea for people that are in coastal regions where you are going to be downwind of coastal volcanoes to start considering respiratory problems in a very serious way, because they're not going to be going away anytime soon. Make sense?
Mm. Well, think about this. I mean, with the WebBot program and its maybe ability to predict events, if the 2012 kind of earth changes and disasters are true, wouldn't you see a big disruption in the information that it's bringing back to you? Like maybe it would stop giving you information or stop giving you predictions because ways and things that were possibilities once more would since be destroyed or wiped out.
That's quite correct, and that's exactly where we are now. I haven't issued a single report since May, and we're effectively out of business. Our data since 2006 is forecast within this model of the model space itself that we would run into what we had called the data wall or the data gap or the big silence in the around May of 2013. It would be complete, and it would sort of filter in starting about now. We had a couple instances of it forecast for early in 2011, and indeed we had the internet shut down in the Arab Spring as they tried to control that. And so what we think that the forecast was is that by May of 2013, from our viewpoint, the data seems to be suggesting that the internet is not available. Now, we also had a global coastal event.
Whoa. Or... what if the WebBot is predicting somebody taking it out?
How?
By control of the internet. The Pentagon has been working on a global internet control grid for some time.
Right.
And they would have the ability to shut down the web. Maybe it's predicting its own getting shut down by the powers that be or something.
Well, that would be the case, and I would buy that, if we didn't have these forecast, if it wasn't ever so much more complex than that to begin with, because we don't do such things as, you know, word count and word frequency and that sort of thing. But also, we've had this thing where the data model forecast that the data was changing, that the nature of language was changing, and indeed that showed up, and I know that the Pentagon couldn't do, couldn't change 10 million people in how they type. Or 100 million, or 200 million, however many.
But they probably could blow. They could probably could blow up that many instantly, though. All right, we'll be right back after the break with Cliff High from halfpasthuman.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down. Then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream. Just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go, in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
VinnieEastwoodShow.com. One request for you, the listeners. If you have been to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, please go to the 2012 archives. So you go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and then up in the top left-hand corner next to Home, it's got radio archives. You got the Vinnie Eastwood archives. Go to the 2012 archives and share them around Facebook. Like them or tweet them or something like that. Because on the homepage, we've got like, I don't know, 3,000 Facebook shares or nearly 4,000 shares all above. And then on the... 2012, but nobody's looking at the archives. There's like 12. So yeah, there's an extraordinary amount of incredible guests that we've had on this show, and I can guarantee you, if you go to the 2012 archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, you will find something that will stimulate you and expand your mind more than any illicit substance known to man. Kind of like my very special guest, Cliff High from halfpasthuman.com. Welcome back.
Thank you much.
Mm-mm-mm. Lessons for the future. I find when we're talking about the future and we're talking about things that will happen and what have you, there's an inherent disbelief from people, and also there's an inherent, not more doomsaying again. What would be your response?
I can prove categorically through some easy mind experiments, thought experiments here, that everybody predicts the future constantly, every day, successfully. And the doom and gloom part, I'm not particularly a doomer. I'm a realist. I would much rather know that I have an obstacle and deal with it as a challenge than to be in denial and have to face it with that particular mindset. It's less effective. It's not particularly successful. And if someone wishes to check out and, you know, say, okay, I'm just not going to bother with this, well, that's fine. But my approach is, you know, I'm not trying to sell a doom position. I'm simply stating from my perspective, the facts are these, and we can dispute the facts, but if they're quantified and we agree on them, then it may lend some credence to my conclusions. And my conclusions say, well, you know, there's a potential you might get, for instance, more than simply a nasty sulfur smell out of this, and you should maybe be advised to have some masks or the ability to seal your house if it were an instance where there's going to be a lot of onshore flow. That's something that you're going to have to examine in a local environment. I can't say that as to where the air mass is going to take some of these particulates and so on, but I can tell you that we are in an expansion event. The whole planet is changing. If someone can't see that, well, perhaps I'm not speaking to someone who's aware enough, and they should go back to bowling or whatever it is that occupies their mind.
This takes me back to what Janet and Stuart Swerdlow says. Stuart was part of the Montauk project where they experimented with mind control, time travel, all that kind of stuff. And just recently they've been getting into kind of survivalism and expanding their knowledge in that area. And they've determined the one most important survival tool. You know what it is, Cliff, don't you?
Sure. Attitude. Mindset.
It's your brain. Yeah, that's right. Because that if you've got the ability to think, it doesn't matter what situation comes at you, because there are many situations that could come at us, aren't there, Cliff, that we would have to cater different responses to and need to be prepared for. But if we had not the knowledge in that situation, it wouldn't matter how much toilet paper or how much dry food we'd had stored away.
Correct. And my thinking is that, you know, universe can decide in any given individual to pick them up in a tornado, deposit them in a mud pile 40 miles away with amnesia, and they can't remember where their toilet paper is stored, so it doesn't matter. But if they can remember how to make toilet paper, you know, that kind of thing. But no, I think a preparation is indeed begins at a mental level and is knowledge. Beyond that, anything else is gravy or to a certain extent, a gift from universe. If you've got the smarts to start thinking about some of these things, then you've got the smarts to react, and it becomes not survival per se, but actually going on beyond mere existence to living. We have a situation where we don't want to survive. That's something that really kind of irritates me, because survival has all of, I'm a linguist, there's all of these negative connotations to the word, as you say, the doomer kind of thing. And so what I think about is, look, we've got a bunch of nasty crud coming our way, and we got to live through it. And we not only have to live through it, we have to live through it well, come out the other side living well, and go on to live better, having had that experience and grown through it. It doesn't mean it isn't going to be a challenge, but it also doesn't mean that it's it needs to be some kind of a heavy doom thing that sits on your brain, if you see what I'm saying. Go ahead.
That's why I try to make jokes about it. For instance, what do you call somebody who's prepping for a nuclear winter?
An optimist?
A chili prepper.
Oh, you got a wicked sense of humor. Okay. Oh, that's pretty cool. But basically what we've got to do is we've got to just approach this stuff sane and rationally. There's all kinds of stuff going on. The government, for whatever reason, is afraid, and I think that's why they're quiet about all of this. They don't want to. They're either afraid of us, afraid of a reaction, afraid of what they've created in us with their education system, to where maybe they think we can't handle it, or whatever the issues are. But they're not sharing their knowledge with us, and it is necessary for the people like myself that going out and suss out some of these things to get on out there and be wrong occasionally, at risk of occasionally also being right. And it's the occasionally being right that is the scary part, but it need not be crippling. As you say, you know, it's like no fear of doom, because, hey, doom is merely an obstacle on our way, right? On our way to our next pie.
Yeah. Hey, and as far as I know, Cliff, almost every day since I became a radio show host on this network, somebody's told me a new way in which I'm about to die. And you know the only thing that's common about all those ways in which I'm about to die? I'm still alive when I'm hearing about it.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, you never hear the one that gets you.
and ergo, there is no need worrying about the thing that'll get you, because when it gets you, you'll never know about it anyway. So there's no point living your current life stressed.
Wrapped in worry, correct.
Because end your life faster anyway.
You fall for all of the problems. Look, the for whatever reason, Let's leave the why issues aside and just look at what they're doing. The society around us is being shaped by the powers that be to enforce or encourage certain kinds of behavior. For instance, in your region, you've got a taxing policy that discourages tobacco use and yet highly favors addictive chemical binge alcoholic use. And not only is it in, it's unlike what is going on in Britain in the social experiment with binge drinking that the powers that being are trying to enforce there. In New Zealand, they've taken a different tact. They've got this weird thing going where they're, you guys have these things called mixers, where it's a unique to your country. It doesn't really, I mean, they exist in other countries, but not
them. We call them Alco Pops. It's like 90% sugar, 5% alcohol, and they feel like kids kind of thing. It's like a kid's drink.
Yeah, and they're combined with other things, though, and here's the issue. In looking at some of the other chemical combinations and the way in which the alcohol policies in New Zealand are being run, it is my conclusion, my opinion, that they are actually attempting to create a situation of people that are continuously dehydrated. Now, I know this sounds really strange. Why would the government want somebody to be continuously
dehydrated? That's obvious, okay? Like, even the Coca-Cola company admits that they put salt in their Coca-Cola, sodium in there, to make sure that you're thirsty.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. We think of it at one level. You're being told that indeed they do this, and then they give you a rational reason, so to speak, a rational reason for them to do it that you accept because it relates to what you think of as their real motivation, which
there's
is
so many knock-on. There's just so many knock-on effects from dehydration.
That's it. Well, there's one serious one. If we go all the way back to our thinking about the creation of matter and how it goes bloop, 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 the very first matter that was created was hydrogen ions, likely. Okay, not the full atom, but the hydrogen ion. But guess what, guy? Hydrogen atoms in the human body are what carry thought in the brain. If you're dehydrated, you don't think correctly. If they keep you at a certain level of dehydration, and their goal, according to reading the CFR reports, is to have you continuously be 5 to 6% dehydrated at an optimal level in your brain, and it will lower your thought level as much as 30%. And it has to do with the ability of the lack of hydrogen ions to carry thought in your physical body. So they actually don't want you to drink water. They don't want you to ever get close to water. They want to lock water up. They want to feed you all of these drinks. They want to get you hooked on energy drinks and all these pop mixes and all these things.
You know what's funny, Cliff, is that they tell everybody that we're putting fluoride in the water to be good for people's teeth, but the only people that got bad teeth don't drink water.
And they beyond drink
fizzy drinks.
Yes. Yeah, and beyond that, of course, we all know fluoride is, you know, a poison, and it's actually the basis of the molecule that helps calcify the pineal gland. And so, see, they've got layer upon layer upon layer of agenda. Exactly. Now, here's the thing, though. Look, here's how easy it is to defeat them. All right? Look, guy, stop drinking fizzy drinks. Instead, start looking into ways to support your body in your ability to think. And so here's the things you need to know. Your emotions are carried by hormones. Any food you consume that screws with your hormones is going to make you susceptible to somebody's mind control, because they will be able to know your emotional state because they will know what your hormonal levels are. If you're not in an optimal hormonal state, you're not going to be calm and centered and so on. You will react inappropriately. And I hate to tell you this, the people that react inappropriately over the next few years will be the first ones to die. We're going to be facing a lot of challenges beyond merely the earth challenges. We're going to be facing these stupid idiots at the top that want to try and control us through this whole process. And these guys are not nice. And so the way to get around this is to start doing things like drinking water and all the stuff your mama told you before you got out of kindergarten. Exercise, eat right, watch what you consume, watch what you breathe, and everything you have ever been told about any commercial product. Instantly start thinking of it as a lie with a deeper meaning and a deeper level within the conspiracy. Now, this isn't doom. It is true that the hydrogen molecule carries thought in the human body. Ergo, anybody attempting to limit the amount of hydrogen molecules in my body is attempting to control my ability to think. Whatever their motivation is, I don't like it, and I'm going to take steps against it.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah. And if all else fails, just try and think, what would a eugenicist psychopath with unlimited power do? Oh, yeah, that's right. He'd exterminate everybody who was, like, kind of slovenly or stupid or black or Jewish.
No, I actually dispute that. Okay, my thinking is that they don't want that. But my thinking is that they need a certain level of ratio of willing slaves. And they're very upset with the idea that the slaves may revolt and become unwilling. And so they want to get rid of everybody. They want to do everything they can to dumb the population down and make them into cattle, into goy.
Would that mean that by further dumbing down society, in order to ensure that there wouldn't be anybody really capable of actually resisting them, they'd simply take out the smartest up branch of society, wouldn't they? And just leave a very small intellectual elite that's completely devoted to the agenda and a complete total serf and slave class, because you can have a serf and slave class that are complete bureaucratic morons, like a security guard or a police officer or a police sergeant or anything like that. Doesn't require a lot of brains. It does require following orders, though, and even a moron can be programmed to can take orders, can't they?
Correct. And actually, they're even more insidious than that, because they now have all these things called the Tetra Towers. I don't know if you guys are aware of these or not in your area, but they're all over Britain. They've even got them down in as far as Mexico. They're starting to come up into the United States. The Tetra Towers operate at the same frequency as the mental process of the brain. And so they operate at the Hertz level, the cycle level of the brain's energy. Now, since we're energetic beings, as I've been telling you, the military knows this, so they're going to attempt to control you at an energetic level. Should you decide you want to resist, they'll just tune that little dial and you'll be nice and passively happy and go back to watching football or, you know, drinking your drink or whatever, and not recognize that, you know, you're rotting away or whatever the conditions were that originally started you wanting to revolt. Now, it actually won't be quite that soft. I suspect it'll be a lot harder when they actually hit us with this stuff, and because it'll be a time of great crisis for the powers that be, because it is my thinking that these people are actually going to go into those deep underground military bunkers. Now, I think that is suicide, but that's beside the point. All the indicators are that these guys have been shoving wealth into giant holes in the ground for decades in preparation for a period of time when they would have to exist as a separate society underground.
I just think these people have abandoned logic completely. I mean, nothing would compel me to lock myself underground with the most sociopathic, criminal, lying, pedophile, Satan-worshipping scum that the Earth has ever freaking seen for 100 years in complete darkness. I don't think that'd be a nice place as well. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinny Aitken Show time.
Signal stretching across the entire encrusted expanding Earth complex, with a little bit of the military-industrial complex mizzled in around it. My very special guest and somewhat fabulous individual, Mr. Cliff High from HalfPastHuman.com. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's been fun.
This has, like, been one of the most enjoyable interviews, like, I think I've ever had on the show, Cliff. Like, seriously. Seriously.
Oh, cool. Thank you very much. It's hard to, most people don't like talking to me for a lot of different reasons, but you're a sharp fellow, so you get the point of all of this, right?
Well, everybody hates what they don't get, you know? I get you.
Yeah, I know. And I try very diligently to make it as understandable to everyone, because nobody is stupid outside of the powers that be and, you know, the military guys. They're obviously not playing with a full deck, but everybody else, hey, they've just been led astray and they just need to be shown the light.
Mm-mm-mm. And with the 30-second attention span of the youth of today through neuro-linguistic programming and whatnot, it might prove a challenge. Yeah.
Dehydration. I kid you not, guy. Look at the progression of drugs through our society. You know, they started off with tea, coffee, all of these drugs. They're all dehydrating drugs. It was known way back then. It's part of a progression all the way up through energy drinks.
Bread, in fact, every kind of salted snack, every mass-produced food, everything that's freeze-dried, everything, a lot of the things that are canned or what, like, it's as if the entire food supply and liquid supply
has been
specifically designed with the direct intention of depriving you of liquids.
Hydration, of water, of the hydrogen molecule that you need in your brain in order to think. Plus, of course, you need the hydrogen molecule to form the hormones that then carry the emotions that you need to have to be able to properly feel and so on. And you know how they're screwing with the hormones? They're giving you all the synthetic hormones and the plastics and the tofu and all of this other stuff. And it's creating a whole class of people that will respond the way they want hormonally and won't be capable of aggression against authority because they're designing the diet to support that.
Well, kind of like a chemical lobotomy, or similar to how the CIA used drugs and chemicals to induce mind controlled states during MK Ultra programs, but sort of like on a lower form on a mass scale.
Correct, and it's actually the lower form they found that is the most effective because they can actually. There's this long study that was produced or written about within the Council for Foreign Relations here in the United States about the stratification of intellectual capacity, if you will, in the society that we have now. And they're talking. This goes right hand in hand with the Agenda 21, the control of water as a resource, and basically, if they had their way, it would be very much like that movie, Idiocracy, where they were astounded at the idea that you would ever put water on anything because you wanted to have Brondo, which had electrolytes. They couldn't tell you what electrolytes were, but that didn't matter.
Brondo, the thirst mutilator.
There you go, exactly. And see, but here is the secret in the movie, because they were telling you about, look, what's the name of the movie? What are they trying to produce? Idiots. They're trying to produce an idiocracy, and they do it actually through the control of what? What was the key resource in this whole thing? The whole point of the central character's mythical human journey was to bring water back to plants, to bring water back to life. Look at the symbolism in there. Look at the other movies that have come on out that they're telling you the same thing. John Carter of Mars, a fantastic film. I loved it. There's some huge deviations from the actual story in key areas that were not written about. But the whole central theme there, water, the fact that the oceans were gone on Mars and what it meant to them and so on and so on and so on.
What's ironic, Cliff?
Yeah.
Is that those two important films, which I agree with you, are fantastic films, have not met with very wide critical acclaim. Or very wide public
recognition. I wonder if that's by design. I wonder if you would, because of some weird mental aberration of your own, you're forced to tell everybody these things. So you pay for these hugely expensive movies that tell the whole plot that you need to get it out, and then you tank them before they're even released with your critics on your newspapers saying, oh, what garbage, what garbage.
Well, I interviewed Mark Passio, who's a former priest of the Church of Satan, and he says that's kind of one of the satanic principles, is that if you're going to do something bad or whatever, you kind of have to tell them about it first on at least some level.
Here's the thing, and you know why that is. I mean, it works, again, at our vibration level, right? I mean, everybody's a vibrational being. You know intuitively when someone's trying to con you. You know, if your brain is not occluded with dehydration and chemicals and this kind of thing, you're a very sensitive individual. All humans are. And so you know when trust is worthy in someone and when it is not. You know when someone's lying to you. You can feel it in the timbre of their voice. You know, you see it in the little movements of their eyes and so on. Unless you're, of course, dumbed down to a certain extent, right? And so they do this on that level to slip this whole thing by you. But they have to tell you this because at this real key level, human to human, vibration level to vibration level, in order to get to steal from someone or co-opt their mind, they must agree to it. You must, in essence, invite them in by agreeing to the process at some point. And they do this very much like a car salesman. Okay, you got to use car salesmen. They're notorious around here in the United States. They want to sell you this piece of junk. They start you off with a process where they want to get you to continually answer in the affirmative a whole long string of questions until they ask you the final question, you want to buy the car. Well, you've said 30 yeses already. You say that 31st yes, and you bought the car. And that's what they're trying to do, is they're trying to sell you the proposition and get you to buy in with their vision of the planet. Now, what you need to do is say, hey, have a drink of water, get rid of all the fizzy drinks and all the dehydrating chemicals and so on, and stand up and say, no, I don't buy that vision of the planet. I'm going to have something else entirely different.
Yeah, I can think. Thank you very much. I'm not keen on living in your type of society for people who can't.
Correct.
Because I would be excluded, very easy.
And you can start at the your own personal level. And here's the thing. A lot of people are scared of death, and I'm here to tell you that the death process itself is not fun, but you are eternal beings, and so there's no real reason to worry about what comes after that. It's all natural and so on. And this gives you a great sense of freedom, because you can say to yourself, the worst that can happen to me in the materium is that I can die. And guess what? I'm going to die anyway. So it's just a question of when. And so I can determine that, and that gives me my power. I can stand up and say at any time, you cannot defeat me. The most you can do is accelerate my death by some unknown quantity of time by trying to kill me now. But here's the key to the whole thing. If I'm harmonized with universe, as an Aikidoist, I know this to be true. If I am in harmony with universe, before you can kill me, you must sever the bounds that bind me to universe. And that's really hard to do.
Is that the origin of the government's alleged double blacklist, that they need to kill you in this dimension and the other in order to get rid of you?
Yeah, and they can't do that. That's I won't go into the details, but knowing the energetic nature of the universe, I know us to be eternal, and so that's an illusion on their part. And it's yet again more mind control. They want you to think about it. They want to buy into the idea that they're omnipotent and kick your butt anytime they want. You need to be afraid of them and all of this kind of thing. Fact of the matter is, they're afraid of us.
You were talking about how people intuitively know that they're being scammed, right? You know that little cup game where you've got three cups and a bead or something like that, and you switch them around or whatever? Well, think about the bead as being the truth, and all of the cups as all the different stories that we hear at a constant basis throughout the day. And we're constantly having to look at this very, very quick and confusing movement and attempt to discern the truth from it, right? That is the scam that is being played on us, when the reality is you're just there voluntarily. You're simply sitting there taking part in a game that's being played on you.
Correct.
Stop being a participant, and you won't get scammed.
Correct. And you don't have to participate in this. You don't have to fall for their emotional triggers. Now, a lot of people, that's not true. A lot of people are, warped out on the various energy drinks and the various combinations of drugs. And so, for instance, if you're taking a psychometric drug that deals with serotonin and you take ginseng, you will become maniacal, and you'll be subject to violent mood swings that people can trigger very easily by altering the amount of sugar in your diet relative to the amount of water that you're intaking. Literally, within an hour, you would have a maniacal episode. So there are all these people that are not able to discern that they need to opt out, so to speak, right? They've been trapped by the matrix because of what's been done to their bodies. So people that listen to me, it's really kind of stupid. Like I say, your mama knew best, right? Anything you learned before kindergarten is good. Anything you learned after that, forget it and start relearning. But, you know, drink your water, eat your veggies, you know, stay away from all the salt, get your exercise and get plenty of sleep so that you can think, because it's sure going to be required.
It is, and that's something I recommend to everybody. When you get up in the morning, drink a liter of water, and you'll be surprised how regular your bowel movements become, and you get rid of a whole bunch of that dry, cloggy crap that's in your system. And also, make sure that you're not sleep-deprived, because it makes you less coordinated. You can't think when you haven't slept.
It also increases stress.
Yeah, and stress increases illness. It's a knock-on effect. Have you noticed that, Cliff? Everything in the universe is either a ripple effect or an as-above-so-below effect.
Which is the same, isn't it? Just different aspects of duality, right? So that's why you've got to be centered in between the two and try and stay in the middle of that vibration.
Indeed. Well, Cliff, thank you very much. I think you've kind of centered my vibrations today. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in as well. And if you support the broadcast and the work that we do here, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe for $5, $10, $20 a month, or give us a big donation, something like that, because we've got a lot of work to do and not enough money to do it. And thank you to Cliff High as well from halfpasthuman.com. See you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.